blast from the past in the VP debate last night. Memories of when the annual deficit and the national debt kept us up at night. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. At the debate among would-be vice presidents last night, there was a certain retro quality to one key section connected to money in the economy. The question put to the pair was about neither side's economic plan reducing the growing $19 trillion national debt. Here's a bite from Republican Pence, who blamed the other guys.
I think the fact that under this past administration, of which Hillary Clinton was a part, we've almost doubled the national debt is atrocious.
Democrat Kaine, for his part, chose to ignore the question and talk taxes.
We have a tax plan that targets tax relief to middle-class individuals and small businesses and asks those at the very top who've benefited as we've come out of recession to pay more.
Longtime federal budget watcher Stan Collender contributes to Forbes and tweets at The Budget Guy. He says there may be a reason debt deficit hasn't been top of mind this campaign.
The deficit as a percent of GDP is one of the lowest levels in years. And, you know, with interest rates being as low as they are, it's not a question of whether the government can or should borrow. It's just a question of what it should borrow for. But it doesn't seem to be much in the public's mind. It's not even in the top five in most polls. So it's almost a little surprising that it came up in the debate last night, since both candidates are proposing to increase the deficit and the debt by substantial amounts.
Yes, because if you talk about infrastructure, which both candidates seem anxious to fix in America, that costs money, and that's almost the opposite of the deficit debt issue.
The increases in the debt and deficit that the candidates are talking about is more for tax cuts than it is for spending increases. Spending continues to be a taboo subject in Washington, even when it's for things that people like infrastructure or like defense. The deficit is a subterfuge. It's an issue that people raise when they don't know what else to blame things on, and they blame it on the deficit.
Stan Collender is also executive VP at Corvus MSL Group in Washington. He also pays inordinate attention to the budget. Stan, thank you very much.
My pleasure, David.
The payroll company ADP just said that private sector employers in America added just 154,000 new people in September. That's less than expected. The official jobs report is on Friday. Agricultural, chemical, and biotech giant Monsanto reported profits just now that beat expectations, but the stock is down 0.1%. This comes just weeks after Bayer of Germany announced it's buying Monsanto. But there's uncertainty, including an economy that is tough for many farmers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
It's not clear that government regulators will approve Bayer's proposed takeover of Monsanto.
But this is a big-time merger between two big-time players who have large market shares.
Vincent Smith teaches economics at Montana State University. He says government regulators are worried about the size of the combined company.
It could be 1 year or 2 years before there's a decision on this merger.
In the meantime, Monsanto has to keep humming along in a tough environment. Crop prices have fallen, and cash-strapped farmers can't afford Monsanto's fancy new seeds. And the company might have trouble holding on to its top scientists, says Jason Lusk. He's an agricultural economist at Oklahoma State University.
And when there's uncertainty in your current employer, that is going to increase the appeal of other jobs that may have more certainty.
Lusk says Monsanto could counter the uncertainty by stressing the benefits of the merger, like more resources for scientists. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
A battle over building what's called the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline could take a new turn today. A federal appeals court this morning is set to hear a request by the Standing Rock Sioux tribe to stop construction of the 1,200-mile pipe in North Dakota. Protesters who support the tribe have set up a sprawling encampment, which is changing everyday life for locals. Amy Sisk of Public Media's Inside Energy has this report.
Like the people protesting, Tom Wheeler was once skeptical of pipelines.
I did not want my land tore up with these pipelines, but in the end, you have to have pipelines in order to save the roads.
A few years back, large trucks carried crude past his house in the Bakken oil patch. Since then, traffic's died down and the potholes disappeared now that oil, gas, and wastewater lines cross his property. Now, he's okay with projects like Dakota Access.
It's going to get crude oil to places that need it and can use it. We can't. If we could use it all in North Dakota, it wouldn't matter, but we can't.
Protesters who oppose the pipeline have said a potential spill would contaminate the nearby Standing Rock Sioux Reservation's drinking water. The tribe has sued, trying to stop the project from crossing under the river upstream. The protests have disrupted life for residents along the Missouri River, like Dee Beckler. She lives near the protest camps on the remote prairie next to the reservation and says she is friends with some of the tribal members.
But I disagree with what's going on right now with them.
She needs to drive through a National Guard checkpoint once a week to run errands.
We all just think it's ridiculous that we've got to be on pins and needles down here not knowing what's going to happen.
Still, some residents side with the protesters. Sharon Usselman shares their concerns the pipeline will leak, and she admires the tents, teepees, and tribal flags that line the camps.
It's really amazing. It's beautiful. I mean, it's seriously beautiful, all the flags and everything.
More oil in North Dakota is carried by pipeline now than rail or truck. Dakota Access supporters point to deadly accidents involving oil transported by rail as a reason to use pipelines instead. But pipelines aren't totally safe. Federal data shows 77 spills or other significant incidents with crude lines just last year, though there were no fatalities. In Bismarck, I'm Amy Sisk for Marketplace.
Inside Energy is a public media collaboration focused on U.S. energy issues. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.